When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
Hey guys, welcome to CarCast. We've got a cool show. We're gonna start talking about the Senna and collectability of some of these cars, and then we'll touch a little bit on driving the GT 500 and the Bentley Continental GT, and a couple of other things as well that I think you guys will enjoy. Before we get started, a word from our friends at Geico. You know, we're apart these days, but we are sharing more, and Geico would just like to say thanks for that. Thanks for sharing all your videos of dance moves and DIY haircut fails and all kinds of fun stuff that you've been posting. And it's Geico's turn to share as well with the Geico Give Back. It's a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. And because Geico's committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Go to geico.com/giveback for more information. That's geico.com/giveback. Hey guys, welcome to CarCast. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndre, with Bill Goldberg. How you doing, Bill?
I'm great, man. How are you?
Doing all right. See, you're inside today.
Yeah, you know, it's a little windy outside. It's hot. Well, it's not nearly as hot as it was yesterday. I mean, we had a nice little quote-unquote cold front come through, and it knocked it from 100 down to 91. So, yeah, we're out of the thick of it. You kidding me? It's June, beginning of June, and it's already 100 degrees here. So I'm not questioning my move by any stretch, but man, it's going to be hotter than hell.
Yeah, it's gonna be hot. Like I did a lot of years in Arizona growing up as a kid, and
oh man. That's dry heat.
Yeah, whatever. I don't care. It's still hot.
Whatever.
it's still hot. Now. Like even when I came out to California, I wanted to be as close to the water living in Venice, or like, you know, I've always lived in Venice and Santa Monica area. I just don't get the whole like, hey, move to the valley and basically pay roughly the same amount of rent and just have it be 20 degrees hotter. When I leave the studio here in the summer, I'll leave the studio, and by the time I drive home in about 45 minutes to an hour, you could see the temperature drop almost a full 30 degrees. You know, on good average, God, at least 20 something between and during that hour drive, just going from out here in, you know, in Glendale, Burbank to Venice. But you're in for a treat.
Yeah. I'm prepping for it. That's for sure. Out there every day in it. But, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, man. It's all good.
So we were talking a little bit about some of the posts you had up on Instagram lately. You know, posts about the car. We all want to get into that. And some of the stuff that Gearhead's been doing on the Charger. We'll have to talk to those guys as well. We'll get them on the show and get an update on that. But this, you know, it's a little side venture you got going on, being in the production world as you are, and the live events world. You teamed up with a buddy of yours to do these Clean Hand Solutions, and we'll just do a quick plug for it. So if anybody's out there and they're planning events and or productions or you know, like block party stuff, you know, like concerts, things like that. Like, how are all of those things going to happen with some amount of social distancing? And so you and a buddy came up with certainly one of the things that will probably be a requirement at these events, right?
Yeah, I mean, not only is it a requirement, but I mean, we got a new norm, man. I mean, there's no question about it. Everybody's extremely conscious about keeping their hands clean, and especially after going to the restroom. So, I mean, you go to these live events and you see all the porta potties outside, and there's really no available area to wash your hands and to stay clean. you listen to everybody, and the best way to not transmit the coronavirus is obviously keep your hands clean and, you know, wear a mask. But, you know, to be part of the solution, we tried to think outside of the box. There were a number of people that didn't have jobs at the time. There were a number of trailers that didn't have a purpose. You know, they were allotted for production purposes. Obviously everything in LA is put on the back burner. So, he was thinking outside of the box, and I was, you know, he picked up the phone, and we came up with this, and I think it's a great idea. I think, like I said, there's a new norm, and the best way to describe it is go to cleanhandsolutions.com. That's the best way for you to really understand it as a whole, because I am from time to time not the best spokesperson, as you can tell, but I think it's a great idea. We thought there was a definite demand for it, and so that's the story that I'm sticking to.
So these are trailers. They're kind of like when you go to events, you have the porta-johns like at the racetrack or whatever, but then there are a handful of the nicer ones. Like you know you go up the steps, it's the big white trailer. They got the portable bathrooms in there, which obviously not a lot of events have those because they're more expensive and they're fancier. But what you guys did is basically build a version of that that's just sink. So imagine going up to a big trailer, like a merchandise trailer where the whole side opens up and you can buy t-shirts and hats at a venue. Well, imagine the whole side opening up and there's just a line of sinks and paper towels and whatever, and everything's nice and clean and whatnot. So you guys can rent out these trailers for events. You know, like you said, yeah, events or productions or whatever. So
they're for rent. They're for lease. They come anywhere from four bays to eight bays to 10 bays to 12 bays. So all different kinds of sizes. We're working on portable ones now that just have 3 to 6 wash stations. Mm-hmm. And, I just think it's a great idea, man. So there you have it, man. Keep your hands clean. And another thing that Matt came up with is proper placement of ultraviolet lights in each of the bays. You close the thing for 45 seconds, and it actually cleans itself. So disinfects itself. So any bacteria in there after a certain period of time, it kills 98% of it. You have an attendant, you know, wipe up the extra 2%. There's an area where it doesn't get the entire surface, but just a great idea, and mm-hmm. I think it's mm-hmm. going to be the new norm for sure.
Yeah, well, good luck with that venture. I think it's going to be interesting, and I'm sure you're going to see it on the sets of your own productions as you're going back. Now they say here, I believe the announcement was June 12th, where, you know, LA is allowed to start doing some productions. I'm sure all of these rules are going to apply, and I'm sure people are starting to scramble to figure out what the rules are going to be and how to make that happen. But yeah, I guess film and TV productions can start to happen, you know.
I'm waving Gage off. Sorry about that. Well, I called him. I was yelling.
Oh, Gage could come in and say hi. We always love to catch up with him.
It's all good.
Anyway,
that's what's so fun about doing these Zooms and watching everybody doing a Zoom or watching everybody, you know, doing like a reunion for television shows and putting these events on over the past couple months. You see dogs coming in, you see people farting on the screen, you see kids running by. There's all kind of stuff going on. So
there is actually watching some of the fails, some of the, like, a lot of newscasters trying to do their stuff from their kitchen, God, and people walking by is kind of funny. But anyway, car news. Let's get on to some car news, because that's what we do here.
Bentley?
So the Bentley was fantastic. Believe it or not, the Bentley was fantastic. So I've been driving.
But how can you say believe it or not? I mean, I would assume that that car would be nothing but fantastic.
So I got the Bentley Continental GT. It's a first edition. And they have a twin turbo V8, and they have the V12. And the V12 is a little bit faster, a little bit heavier, a little more luxurious, a little more expensive. But it is nice to have sort of this V8 version as well. By the way, the V8 version is still 0 to 60 in like 3.5 seconds, 3.7. And the 12 was like 3.4. So it's more of a status thing than it is a performance thing. They sent it over in black, just straight up gloss black with a beautiful red, dark red interior, diamond stitch, all the nice bits. A little odd that a press car showed up in black because they're so hard to photograph. They're just basically a mirror, but it looked fantastic. And Adam and I had to do some stuff this weekend. We had some errands to run. We had some places to go and meet up with some people all up along the coast, Ventura County, Malibu area. And I said, well, I'll just pick you up. Let's take the car out and let's try it. And every mile you put on that car, you're like, it gets better and better. You realize it's super comfortable. It's got heated and ventilated seats. It's got massage in the seats and there are different versions of it that you can put on. The sound system's great. Everything is built top notch. You feel the quality, like when you're trying to adjust the AC vents or feel the grill on the speakers, like that's machine billet. You know, it's not a piece of tin, like it's good. And, it was good. It was a fun car. Now, the previous Continental GT was built on the VW Phaeton platform. And that platform wasn't super successful, largely because that engine was so far forward, almost in front of the axle, and it just put so much weight on the front. It didn't handle well. And the Continental GT, they started throwing some horsepower at it on the previous version. So it was quick in a straight line, but that's really about it. The new Continental GT is based on the Porsche Panamera platform. So it's much better balanced. And so if you take the Porsche Panamera and Bentley puts their spin on the suspension tuning and the airbag adjustments, and it gives that really nice ride. It was a great car to drive and do what we had to do this past weekend. And then yesterday I gave it back and swapped it out for the new Shelby GT500, which...
Okay, you went from one end of the spectrum to the next.
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah.
You guys know I'm a fan of this car, not just because it's a Mustang, but it really is the pinnacle of the Mustang world. 760 horsepower. It's seven-speed paddle shift. It's a seven-speed DCT. It's a dual-clutch transmission. It's actually made by Tremec, who made all the manual transmissions for us Vipers and Camaros and Mustangs and whatever. Tremec developed it for them. It only comes one way. It only comes in the DCT. And when they launched this car at their event in Vegas last year, I was invited out. They did a few days of their whole presentation. You go out, you talk to the engineers, you talk to the designers, you get in the car, you drive through the canyons, you experience it for a few hours, and then they brought us to the road race course at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. We were able to do laps around there, and then we switched cars and got other GT500s. They had about a dozen of them out there. We went to the drag strip. And there was another team there that's like, here's the launch control and the built-in Christmas tree, and you can try to launch it here, and we can change the RPM launch for you. And they were great putting on a really cool event. But after that, I wanted to get on the list to get the car home, and what is it like sort of in the real world? So I've got it now. I've only had it for about a day, so we'll talk a little bit more about it next week. But obviously, I'm a fan. But you know, it starts at about 80 grand. It can work its way up to about 100,000. Kind of in the same realm as the new C8 Corvette. And we'll talk to Alistair Weaver from Edmunds again at some point, because Edmunds bought a C8 Corvette and a GT500, and they optioned them out to be both around 85 grand. So the GT500 doesn't have the wild track pack and carbon fiber wheels. They have more of the street version of it, which is actually what I'm driving right now. I think the one that I have stickers at 81,000 or 81.5. So the carbon track pack is like an $18,000 option. You can get it, and it's cool, and maybe it's a little more collectible. I don't know. But as far as driving it around, you don't necessarily need that. So I'd love to see a comparison from Edmunds on the C8 versus the GT500. But for now, I'll be driving this for a few days. I'll let you guys know how it is around town. But if
first impressions.
Well, you know, because I was on the track with it already, I kind of got spoiled. Instead of driving it on the street for a week and then hitting it's, you know, it's fantastic. It makes the right noises. It makes the right, you know, it handles great. And what we're able to do now in these modern day muscle cars and the luxury cars as well is with magnetic ride and the different modes. I mean, here's a Mustang that's $80,000, but you don't even need to buy the GT500 to get some of the same features. You know, launch control and the Christmas tree drag launch program that they have in it. You can adjust the RPMs, adjustable suspension, adjustable steering feedback, the sport mode, the track mode, the normal mode, and then you can program your own My mode. I mean, all of this adjustability, it really is kind of what BMW was doing with their M buttons, their M1 and their M2, you know, M modes. But you usually would find that in a car that was, you know, pretty expensive. And to be able to have those features in a much more affordable car kind of bridges the gap between the muscle cars that we like and also like the BMW M5s and M4s that we like and the Audis and even as you step up to you know, Corvette and Acura NSX and Ferrari and you know it, the performance of these cars are so similar, you really start to buy the car based on, I don't know, aesthetics, affordability, you know, things like that, because they're all making the same horsepower. They're all going just as fast as each other. It's good.
It's back to brand loyalty.
It really is. And in some cases, it's collectability or production numbers or just what you like aesthetically. You know.
But what do you think about that world right now with so many different options and so many cars that can be optioned, you know, uniquely?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering what the market's going to look like in 20 years. You know, there's so many cars that are flooding the market that are valuable now that you would assume down the road are going to be valuable also, but will the same rules apply?
It may take a little longer, and it won't necessarily apply to everything. Look, the idea for a lot of these cars, you know, the limited production ones, you know, the Demon, maybe the GT500, the Challenger 50th anniversary that we're going to talk about in a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is, look, almost all cars depreciate. There's a select few that don't. Those are the ones that people try to collect. But if you can get a car that depreciates less or even holds its value, it's kind of a win. It's a win in my book. So,
well, there's no question, because, you know, it's like playing with money at a casino or playing with the casino's money and walking out with, you know, where you didn't lose anything. I mean, you got free entertainment for that period of time. That's how I look at it.
That's how I'm seeing it too. It's like, if you can break even on it, well, you got to drive the car for a number of years. You're absolutely right. You go to Vegas, you drop $200 in the casinos, and you're there for 4 hours getting some free drinks and having fun. But if you leave
that's
with 200 bucks, and if you leave with the same 200 bucks in your pocket because you broke even, we're like, all right, that was fun. Right. So it's kind of a version of that. But not all of it applies. Look, a LaFerrari came out, and we know some guys that bought it. Your brother, I think, has one. Our buddy Ken Lingenfelter got one. And our friend Sammy Hagar got one. And they were on the list. They're longtime Ferrari owners, so they were sort of given the right to buy it, which is kind of an odd thing, but I get how it works. You get that letter in the mail that says, congratulations, we're going to take $1.5 million of your money.
Just because you were on the list to buy 10 million of our previous cars. Now this one's yours. Pay us, please.
But those guys knew and certainly hoped it would turn into free money later. Like, they're not selling it right now, but you know, you spend $1.5 million, the car jumps to 2.2, 2.5.
That just sold.
Yeah, right. Enzo as well.
We talked about that.
However, what we saw at Barrett Jackson and a few other auctions, surprisingly, the McLaren Senna, which we think is an amazing car, took a little bit of a hit. A lot of people bought it. They thought it was going to be free money, a la Ferrari. But it didn't. And they were selling, you know, all in with the fees for under $1 million. You know, I mean, it's not a huge hit if you're spending $1 million on a car. But yeah, those guys that bought them weren't expecting to lose $100,000, $150,000, $200,000 on those cars. They thought they would do better. And maybe they will start to creep up. And I think that could be just an example of when the Senna came out. I like this Senna. When I get up on it in person, there's so much going on and you realize how cool it is. But when it first came out, the initial impressions were it doesn't look that good. And I think it kind of grew on people, but that stigma is still there. The LaFerrari is a pretty car. The Enzo is a pretty car. The McLaren P1 is a pretty car. I wouldn't say that the Senna is a pretty car.
No, but I think the Senna was built for a different purpose. The Senna was an F40, basically.
Yeah.
Right. And
yeah.
So I got to say that the first time I saw that car in person was at Goodwood years ago. Right. Mm-hmm. The first time anybody had really seen it. And I fell in love with the car because it's unique. It's completely different. I love the backstory, obviously.
Yeah.
And, man, the car is violent and it's just awesome. But after driving it, I can honestly say I did not like the car.
Okay. Yeah.
And I'm really surprised that I could say that I don't like that car, because maybe my expectations were so high and it's so raw. I don't know. It's like I said, I compare it with the F40, right? It makes noise. It's jerky. It's not smooth, but it's violent and it does what you ask it to do. But I don't think they're, I don't know. Maybe that sector of the muscle car or the supercar, that supercar sector's even smaller than I thought. I don't know.
Yeah.
Look, I think it's a specialized car.
It is a specialized car. And you're right. Some people don't love the design and some people thought it wasn't as great or as comfortable as they wanted it to be. And I think when you get a little bit of those things going on about the car, it's tough to get all that money out of it because there are some doubts on that car. So, you know, we'll see what happens for there, but
I have a clip of Kevin Hart driving me around in the Senna.
Yeah.
At Bondurant, and I've been holding on to it for a very long period of time, and you knew that it happened.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm going to post it here soon, but you know, if you remember back to that day, there was a LaFerrari there.
Yeah.
There was a Pista there. There was a number of different Lamborghinis. The 570 that I hit the deer in was there.
Oh, the McLaren, yeah.
Yeah, so we got a lot. We had a lot of cars out on the track, and we got a lot of looks, a lot of different feels, you know.
Yeah.
And I was very disappointed with the Senna. I can't believe I'm even saying it, but that... That LaFerrari was unbelievable.
Yeah, and that's the consensus on that is people that love the LaFerrari or getting the LaFerrari, everybody that gets into it just says they love driving it. And even around town, I mean, look, there's a lot of collectors out there, Sammy Hagar and Ken Lingenfelter specifically. Those guys drive it occasionally. They're busy, but also, you know, they take it into the dealer. They, you know, get some service done, get it checked up. And it's that drive where they talk about the most. They go, you know what? I love driving this car. Sure, I went, you know, 50 miles today. I went to the dealer and back and, you know, got some service done and stopped for lunch and whatever. They're like, that's the drive that they love. And I'm curious if because I haven't really seen it, I don't know that that's the drive people love in a Senna. I think you put the Senna on a track, and people are like, oh, this is fantastic.
Yeah. It's a totally different animal, completely different animal. And that's what they were gunning for when they built it. But I think that they thought that that sector was going to be larger. I don't know. Or the car falls short. I don't know. I was just very surprised that I was as disappointed as I was with it. It was terrifying, not terrifying, but it was awesome in that it was so fast and so nimble.
Yeah.
But in between every time you ask it for performance, it's freaking uncomfortable. And the feel was not there. It's weird, man. Yeah. I look at it kind of like that outside of the box Lambo SUV.
Yeah.
Where, you know, 10 years down the road, it's freaking, you know, it's so expensive and it's so exclusive, you know, and it's so different that it garnered that much money. Maybe in a perfect world, that's what that turns out to be 10 years down the road.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You're talking about the first Lamborghini SUV, the big boxy one.
Not the Urus. The old one.
Yeah. The big boxy one.
People are paying $400,000 to $500,000 for it.
Yeah, those got kind of crazy. You know, I think Chris will probably know. Adam had interviewed just recently Jay Leno.
Yep.
And I think that's coming out today. We're in the studio. This show is coming out today. I think that interview is coming out today. It wasn't for CarCast. It was for Adam Carolla's show. Mm-hmm. Although I feel like later in the year or something when we've got to do a couple of end of the year best of shows, we should pull that interview and make it a CarCast interview. But Leno and Adam talked about his McLaren F1 that he has, the three-seater one that he has, and kind of he went through the process of how he wanted to buy it. And he, you know, I guess he bought it new from McLaren, but it was a few years after, like they still had a few.
Yeah, they had one left.
Yeah.
Every time we talk about this car, I want to vomit.
It was out of production. And yeah, he called McLaren.
I know the car was like, I don't know, like a 94, and he called him in 98. He's like, can I get one? They're like, yeah, we still have one. And he paid whatever the sticker was, $800,000 for it. Mm-hmm. And
it took him 2 weeks to decide too. He said, I'm going to think about it. And then so two weeks later, he calls him like, we still have it, but we have another offer. And Jay just jumped on it.
He's like, fine, I'll give you the $800,000 now. Yeah. When Adam asked Jay, because Jay's very prideful of this, he loves this like we all do. What's the current value? He said of that car.
He said
$15 million.
Oh,
now it's up.
Well, dub this out. F*** you guys.
Yeah,
I passed. I told you this story before. I passed on one at 800. Man.
Oh, I didn't know that. See, now I'm with Bill.
Now you bring that car up, and I'm imagining you're bringing it up because you look at it in the same vein as the Senna, maybe.
Possibly. But, I mean, it's
the way I look at it. It can be in its way, but driving the two, they're not even comparable.
Yeah.
Yet the 94, you know, is normally aspirated, no power steering, no power brakes, you know, no power, no traction control. The thing. It's a straight out race car, but the experience of driving it is really hard to explain. It's like a dream for a guy like me.
Yeah.
The Senna, I was expecting to be the modern version of it, but I just didn't get nearly the same feeling after getting out of the car.
Yeah.
After driving on the track.
And the F1, it took 20 years to get good money out of it. And now that we're 25 years into it, it's hitting that $20 million mark or 20 plus million. But when we started going, like, I don't know.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's an opportunity lost. Listen,
Jay says it's the best investment he's ever made.
Yeah, I'm sure it is, son of a bitch.
But not only is it the best investment, it's arguably, hands down, the coolest car by far that I've ever driven. And it's a 94 or a 97, the one that I drove.
Yeah.
You know, and I, to me, there's nothing you can get into that. I mean, I haven't gotten in the cars. I've had the ability to get the press cars that you've had and the mm-hmm. large array. But man, that car it's completely in a class of its own.
And it's amazing that a production street car has been able to really now catch on and increase so much in value like that. Look, we could see it in some racing cars. We can see it in, you know, we've seen some big money in the Paul Newman racing car. We've seen a lot of the Le Mans cars. I mean, certainly Pink Floyd guy, Rick Mason's car.
Dave Mason.
He paid, I don't know, he got his Ferrari racing car or whatever for
Nick Mason.
He got, I don't know what he paid, $48,000, and now it's worth $78 million. You know, but he bought it new 100 years ago.
The 250 GTO.
Yeah, his 250 GTO.
Boy, there you go.
Now we saw it at Goodwood because he was there driving it, and then he had a driver, a friend of his that was a driver, because they were sort of competing with it, and he wanted to show that car off. He's had it forever. He takes it to Goodwood. He's got a team that keeps it in shape and restores it, and Nick Mason just goes in, and the old man zips up his suit and goes up the hill climb and is nearly $100 million. I would argue $100 million because of this story and his celebrity. He's owned it since new, right? I think that adds something to the car. I mean,
You know,
it's not something he would ever sell when we talk to him, but if that car went up for auction, the estimate would be $100 million on that car, you know.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and that's fantastic. Like, I love that he takes it out there and drives it. I think that's fantastic. And to Leno's credit, Leno is sort of an advocate of driving his cars. And then,
and
he'll say, you know, I'll drive them and then restore them back up, and I'll drive them and restore them back up as they need to be. He did a whole... on his McLaren F1, he blew that car apart. The engine came out. He did the whole service on the whole thing. And I believe he did it in-house at his garage, talking with the McLaren people. He's like, we're going to do it. Just tell us what we need to do. And then his team did it. And
that must be nice.
I was over there several times, and I saw that car up on the rack and the engine out of that thing. By the way, just being able to walk around and just peek around that car with no engine in it and see the engine on a stand, it's pretty badass.
It's just a work of art.
Yeah.
It's just everything about that car. It just transcends time. It's just the beautiful car still.
Anyway, so moving forward on the idea of affordable sports cars, we talked about the Mustang Mach 1 coming out. And we weren't sure if this was going to be just a replacement to the Bullet, which we like. You know, Bullet, bang for the buck, $50,000, magnetic ride, you know, Tremec transmission, the big brakes, you know, a little extra horsepower, 480 horsepower. But what we're finding out is the Mach 1 could be a replacement for both the Bullet and the GT350. So instead of being a $50,000 car, it could fit into that high 50, low 60s range, because we have a GT performance pack that is arguably as good as the Bullet. So where does the Mach 1 fit in? But now we're finding out that Ford is saying this could be the best handling Mustang they've built, better than the GT350, which was fantastic. It'll have a naturally aspirated engine, which is obviously different than the GT500. And we were thinking 480, 490 horsepower. But now they're saying, hey, no. This could be 525 horsepower. But the big difference is this. 525 horsepower, and the GT350 was 526. So basically the same. But the GT350... had 429 pound-feet of torque, and this is going to have 450. So the added torque is going to make a difference for this thing for sure. Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting to see. I don't know. I look, when I posted some of the spy photos, I know a lot of guys commented and said, No shaker hood scoop like the early Mach 1s. And in 2004, 2003, they did another Mach 1, which is kind of cool. It had the 305 horsepower, maybe it was 310, or I think, motor out of the Cobras, out of the naturally aspirated Cobras, mm-hmm. but with the shaker hood scoop and stuff. And I was like, yeah, it would be cool to have that. I don't know how they get it to work with the Coyote engine. They could figure it out. But also, that's the beauty of the aftermarket and our SEMA show is of course, somebody's going to come out with a shaker hood scoop version. This company CDC that a lot of the Mustang guys know, they did a version a while back, and I'm sure they're already thinking how do we make that happen.
Can you get the rear window louvers as an option?
I'm sure I don't know if it's going to come on this car, but I'm sure the aftermarket's going to get that as well. The aftermarket is always going to come up with some goofy things as well that nobody really wants, but they're like, it's cheap and it'll be fun. But anyway, that's kind of a neat idea.
While you're on the aftermarket, kind of what's the latest? I know you've had to have heard something. What's the latest on SEMA?
SEMA's happening. Actually, I had a good conversation with our buddies at Magnaflow as well, and mm-hmm. they're making some changes to what's going on at SEMA, but SEMA is happening. I think there are going to be fewer booths overall. That's partly a decision on SEMA and partly a financial decision. SEMA often has a lot of smaller booths, first-time exhibitors that are, you know, trying to get buyers and sign them up. Mm-hmm. But it's a big investment for them to go to a show like that. So a lot of the big companies will all still be there because the way SEMA works is you're kind of grandfathered in to the good spots until you give it up. So during this whole coronavirus thing, and we talked about the airlines having to fly basically empty planes because if they don't stick on their schedule, they lose their seniority. Right. Same thing with the floor plan at SEMA is if a GM or a Ford or an Edelbrock or a Magnaflow or a Meguiar's, like all the good they got a lot of good premium spots. If they don't show up, they kind of get bumped down the list. So they're all going to show up with possibly slightly different booths just to keep their slots there. It's very likely there's going to be less of the big hospitality gatherings and probably far fewer, if not zero, like celebrity signings. They're just trying to avoid people standing in long lines and shaking hands, you know, with 300 people. But I guess every company can kind of figure that out on their own. I don't know if that's a mandate from SEMA or that's each one of the companies is going to be able to figure that out. So it's going to be a little bit different SEMA than what we've known in the past, but I would still fully expect a lot of great parts, a lot of great cars debuting there, a lot of people, and a lot of, you know, people wearing masks. I don't know if it's going to be mandatory or not yet. I think they're still figuring that out, but booth selection has happened. And registration is now open, so right. Media and the attendees that are allowed to go can start making that plan. I would hope that if it is a smaller SEMA show this year, maybe, you know, things like hotel rooms and Uber lines are all a little more accessible, a little more affordable, you know, maybe just sort of a scaled down version of the event. I don't know what it does for Apex, right? Because Apex is that other show that happens in the Sands. But Apex is made up of a lot of international companies. And I think there's going to be certain rules on just everything with, you know, with our country, like how many people can fly in and out of the country and where can they fly out of. And we have limitations on Asian flights right now. I think the 2 flights a day or something like that. So that may come into a play as well. So I'm looking forward to a SEMA. I will go take whatever precautions we need to take. I'm always excited about seeing what's new there and seeing the parts and catching up with friends from the industry that I don't normally get to see in person. They're all over the country. So I don't know. We'll see. I just don't think there's going to be any live podcasting. I don't think we're going to be doing any podcasting from there. We're not going to do any signing events. I think it's just going to be sort of a different version of that.
Yeah. Different normal is going to apply to everything. So
yeah.
I'm curious to see. I heard some rumblings and I heard about one of my vehicles going into a certain booth, but so I kind of wanted to find out the latest on it. So thank you, man. That's great to hear.
You know, and we could get into that a little bit more off the air, but what I would expect would be, because there's going to be like no signings and no podcasting and no like celebrity appearances in the traditional way, that will open up space for more feature cars, and possibly different displays for parts. But I think there's going to be more cars invited to show, both indoor and outdoor, than we've seen before. So yes, I haven't made any deals yet on sending a car or a truck or anything there yet, but you know, it can be a lot of work to getting a car over there. And because I was more motivated on getting maybe the truck, getting the Lightning back there, sort of the phase two of the Lightning over there. But because we were shut down so much of this year, I would want to only show the truck like with the Dart engine, the new engine and the supercharger and the whole thing kind of done. And well, we are moving forward with that. I spoke to Dart. They are building the engine for me. But everything is sort of slowed down. There's fewer people working. There's more social distancing in the factories and in the machine shops and everything. So and there's been work that's been backed up. So I just don't know that the timing is going to make sense for me to have the truck there or something else there. I'd like to, but I'm not pushing it this year because everybody's been stressing out a lot this year and for good reason. So I'm not too worried about whether I have a truck there or not. There's always the following year and other events. Yes, it would be cool to see in person some of the builds that we know are happening will be done soon. We'd love to see your Charger and some things like that. But speaking of Dodge Challenger 50th anniversary edition, and I think it's mostly this is a new, yeah, it's just a trim pack coming out from Dodge, but they're going to be limited edition. They're gonna do 1960 cars, 1960 cars. And there will be 70 in each of the seven colors. And you can get the anniversary edition package on different Chargers. I think on the wait, in the Challengers? Maybe
Challenger,
it's all going to be.
I think
it's just going to be the Challenger, but you can get it on, you know, an RT Scat Pack, the wide body, and a few of the others. So it's going to be kind of interesting. I do like this new gray color that they're doing. I don't recall what the name of it is, but sort of a
heard a lot of rumblings that it was similar to Triple Nickel, which is what the Red Eye is. So
yeah. I don't see the name of the color, but it has maybe a little bit darker version of that. It has a little bit more gunmetal in it. The Triple Nickel has a little bit more. It's a sort of a lighter version. It's like it's a cool version of a silver, where this feels a little bit more of a gray. They're gonna do a gold wheel. Some cool packages. So again, if you're looking for something a little different, maybe something that holds its value a little bit better, but you don't want to drop the coin on you know some of the more expensive versions, high horsepower versions of that car.
What's the base?
So I did have pricing. So the optional package is about $5,000 on the Challenger RTs. And $5,500 on the RT Scat Packs. And then the wide body is, I think, $6,000 for these packages. And they have a bunch of different color options as well. So it's not like as much as we love the Bullet is only in green and black. And You know, you're never going to get a red version of that unless you do it yourself. So a number of colors is optional that they have. So we're gonna wrap things up in a minute, but I just want to give you guys a little update on the Ford Bronco, because we're all excited about the Bronco. Of course, things haven't changed as far as what we understand the lineup to be. We have a regular Bronco, which will be a two-door and a four-door version. I believe built off of one of the truck platforms, or arguably maybe the Explorer and Aviator platform. I had the information. I knew the information. For some reason, I'm drawing a blank. But we've got the Bronco Sport, which is the smaller version, which will probably be on like the Lincoln Corsair and the Ford Escape platform.
Two-door and four-door versions?
I don't know if there's a two-door and four-door version of the Sport. I think it's just going to be a small, possibly four-door compact SUV. But the Bronco, two-door and four-door, and possibly hard-top and soft-top versions of it as well. But, you know, we spoke to Ford. We had Jim Farley on, and he was saying, hey, we kind of flubbed the Ranger launch because we didn't offer enough accessories and options directly from the dealer, like from the factory or through the dealer. And they don't want to make that mistake. So they're going all in with a ton, I don't know, 1,500 different accessories, different configurations. And from the way we understand it is there would be a Bronco Raptor. Now, I don't know if it's literally going to be called a Raptor, but they want to do a more off-roady version of this. And the engine is interesting. I don't hate this idea. I like this idea. It would be the 400 horsepower, 3-liter twin turbo V6, the EcoBoost engine that's out of the Explorer ST and the Lincoln Aviator. Now, Lincoln Aviator also takes that engine and pairs it up with a hybrid drivetrain to get almost 600 horsepower out of it. But a 400 horsepower version of a Bronco could be kind of cool. And again, you know, give this thing a year or two and it's going to be the most tricked out thing at the SEMA show, right? Everybody's going to be making parts for this thing. And that 400 horsepower is going to turn into 550, 570 all day long.
In a heartbeat.
And, you know, with a good solid engine and the turbo power, the original debut of this was going to be in March. It got delayed for obvious reasons. It's going to be happening in July. And so we'll get some more information on that. Of course, it's going to be everywhere when it happens. But now Ford has got a bunch of things. They've got their Mach-E coming out. We've got a new F-150 coming out, possibly a new F-150, a new electric or hybrid F-150, a new Raptor, all coming out within in the next few months. Announcements will be made on that as well. Now, I don't think it's a huge departure on the platform, but it is not just a facelift. This is a new F-150. It's going to be, I don't think the design is going to change that much, but they've been doing a lot of work on this thing to be able to offer, you know, hybrids and possibly an all EV version of it, which will be pretty cool, pretty interesting to see. The rumor on the Raptor is they may go back to a V8 engine. They did the big V8, right? And then they did the 450 horsepower EcoBoost, the V6 twin turbo. They may go back to a V8 version. And I don't know if that's just a Coyote-based engine or what they're going to do there. One of the biggest complaints about the Raptor from a few friends that have them now and people in the aftermarket is the engine actually doesn't sound very good. And even when the aftermarket world does an exhaust on it, they still don't really love it. The companies making the exhaust don't necessarily love it. And the guys that own it, you know, they're like, oh, cosmetically, it's cool. I get the black tips or whatever. But it's just tough to make that engine sound good. Of course, we know there's nothing more, to somebody's personal preference than the sound of a vehicle. So some people are going to love it, some people won't. But the general consensus has been, a little bit like you're saying with the Senna, is not everybody loves the design. Well, not everybody loves the sound of the current Raptor. So the idea of going back to a V8, I think, probably helps out. Listen, if a new Raptor can sound anything like that GT500 I've got out front right now.
Oh, God, yeah.
That truck would be awesome. Badass, especially if you can tune the exhaust and put it in its quiet mode and track mode and sport mode. It would be pretty crazy. But anyway, there's more news, more stuff going on, but we're gonna wrap this up. We've got to give up the studio to the next show. But anything else? Anything else going on? You said Gearhead Fabrications working on the Charger?
Man, yeah, I want to get Mario on to give a rundown of what they got going with the motor, but the turbo system's being done right now. Finishing up on that. Okay, I think the cage is in. Like I said, I need a progress report from Mario to get exactly where we are, but I think we're about 30 days away from it going to our boys at Speed Car, and I think we're about 45 days away from me seeing it, possibly.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's excellent. Let's see if we can try to fit it in. Maybe we'll try to do it for next week. We're going to have our old friend Tyson Sullivan, actor friend of ours. He's been on the show a few times. He's going to give us an update on the Humvee that they've been building. And we're going to talk to the guys at Plan B out of Utah that built it. Just a little recap or reminder. I flew to Utah with these guys, and we ordered up this custom-built Humvee. And they've made a few changes to it along the way, which we'll get into. But they took delivery of it, and they're doing the right thing. The guys trailered it out there to where they live in Arizona. They put a few hundred miles on it while they were in town, the guys who built it, and then they handed it over and they said, we'll be on a plane in a couple of weeks. We're going to check in. You just take down all your notes of things that you like or don't like, and we'll start addressing it. And if we can fix it on the spot, fine, or tune it differently or whatever. Or if we need to, we'll trailer it back and we'll get it back in the shop. Like, there's a lot when you do something this custom, as you know, as we all know, you can't just hand it over and expect it to be perfect. You got to really do some work and get some miles on it and dial it in. And it could, look, it could be anything. It'd be like, hey, 500 miles in, the AC stopped working. Something's going on. I blew a fuse or whatever, you know. So it'll be interesting.
I want to see his face after he's put a couple hundred miles on.
Yeah. Yeah,
happy.
It's pretty badass. They build themselves, you know, sort of a zombie apocalypse vehicle, and it's going to be pretty cool to see. But also, these guys are using it the right way. As soon as they got it, they're like, let's find some dirt. You know, let's go find some mountains, and rock climb, and get it out there. But so we'll see if we can get them on along with maybe we can chat with Mario at Gearhead as well. So maybe we'll put that on the docket next week. All right, guys, thank you so much. A fun show. We appreciate it. And until next time, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
Guys, I'll be right.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit carcastshow.com.
Guys, thank you so much for listening. Hopefully you enjoyed that. That's a fun show. And if you do, you know, be sure to hop onto iTunes, give us a nice little rating. We always appreciate that, and it helps. You know, we're apart these days, but we are sharing more. And Geico would just like to say thanks for that. Thanks for sharing all your cool videos and car stuff and dance moves and DIY haircut fails and inner lip sync star that you may be, your dance jumping around like maniac, your pet videos, all the cool stuff. So thanks for that. And Geico would like to share as well. And they're giving out the Geico Give Back. It's a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. And because Geico is committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Go to geico.com/giveback. That's geico.com/giveback.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it. Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.